aplauso, Andreas Bain.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it is an honor for me to be here and to talk to you about what I think is the most interesting, the most exciting thing I can talk to you about. Actually, I'm going to talk to you about a revolution. I'm going to talk to you about the social data revolution. I want to start in giving you a little bit about my background, and I want to start by asking you, what do you think those terms have in common? Physics, finance, e-commerce, marketing. In the 80s, the most exciting data sources in the world were in physics. I did my undergraduate education at CERN in Geneva, where I felt like the king of the universe, being logged on in one computer with other computers in different continents. Then I figured I need to learn some computer science, specifically some machine learning, how I can learn from collecting data what the underlying patterns are. I did my PhD at Stanford. I then, in the 90s, was assistant and associate professor at NYU, where I looked at the patterns people leave in finance on Wall Street. So I looked at the traces of traders. And then, of course, the web came along. I started a company called Mood Logic that allowed people to discover songs, they didn't know to look for. The key idea there was we got people to give us data, to give us metadata about those songs. I then went to Amazon.com where I worked directly with Jeff Bezos as the chief scientist. Again, thinking about how can we make sense out of those traces people leave on Amazon.com. Why, you might ask? Well, ultimately, of course, to sell them stuff. But the way we viewed it was slightly different. We wanted to get people to share data with us so we could do a better job helping them with their decision-making processes. So all of those things have in common that data is the deep underlying element. So let's talk a little bit about data. There's more than a billion connected flash players in the world. And of course, as I was preparing this talk, my computer asked me, should we allow S3.AmazonAWS.com to access your camera and microphone? I said, sure. And remember, it's okay to do it. Think what that does for marketing. If the computer knows whether I'm sitting there by myself, or maybe with a friend of mine and we are looking at the same stuff, it can do a much better job in showing me marketing messages by understanding my situation. Now, while my own background is, of course, the online world, I have a couple of examples from the offline world. I worked with a European company called Metro Group, one of the world's largest retailers, on understanding how we can measure the behavior of people in the physical store, and each item in that store had an RFID, a radio frequency identifier. So as you're walking through that store and considering that cream cheese, but then you worry about, you know, losing some weight, you put it back and you go for the low-fat version, Metro Group observed that. Just like Amazon.com observes what you are doing online. Here's another example, a car company. So what we have seen here is that you put a device in your car, another physical object, and that device makes maybe life fairer for you by, if you're not driving, like right now, my car is in San Francisco in my garage, I don't have to pay any insurance. But what are you willing to give up for that fairness of only paying when you drive? And also, if you are going home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon versus at 3 o'clock in the morning, should you be paying more or should you be paying less? On the one hand, you might be more awake at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. On the other hand, there might be less traffic at 3 o'clock at night. So once again, it is about understanding the patterns of people through the underlying data they produce. The examples we have seen so far were implicit collection devices of data, I now want in this talk tell you how marketing can use the explicitly shared data people willingly and knowingly share with you. Two examples. First example is YouTube. So the movie I just showed you was from YouTube. Every month, 100 years of video get uploaded to YouTube. Or another example, which was mentioned this morning, Facebook. Every month, 5 billion pieces of content get shared on Facebook. About one piece of content per every person on Earth. Marketing in this Web 2.0 era. People often ask me, what is Web 2.0? And I say, Web 2.0 means people 2.0. People have shared. People have changed in how they see their attitude towards sharing data about themselves and about their friends. And for us as marketeers, when we talk people, what we really mean is customers. So after this introduction, I'm going to talk about C2B, which means customers sharing with business. Then C2C, customer sharing with other customers. Then we do a little exercise. Then I talk about C2W, customer sharing with the world, give you some insights, and close with a couple of minutes about a domain I'm very interested in, namely travel. So let's start with C2B, customer sharing with the business. Imagine that for all the people in the room, you knew the things they have bought. You also knew all of their friends, both within the room and in the outside world. And finally, you knew all their secret desires. What would you do with that? Is that some dream far in the future, or is that reality already? Let me give you some examples from Amazon.com. One of the ways how people share data is they share reviews with Amazon.com. For instance, about that hard drive, they had 116 reviews, and you know it's a pretty good hard drive. People willingly and knowingly share those data. So what do you think is the impact of recommendations? 1%, 2%, 5%, 10%, 20%? If it was 1%, HSM would not have invited me to come here. If it was more than 50%, then I wouldn't come here either. So it must be something in the middle. And indeed, it depends on product group, and it depends on the price point. It also depends on the gender of the person who is looking for it. It's something between 10 and 25% of increase. Deep down in recommendations is Amazon's C2B data strategy. Purchases, clicks, reviews, wish lists, everything you can get. Recommendations based on view data, on click data, and on purchase data, on buy data. So in the simplest case, customers who viewed an item also viewed other items, means you collect as you go along, you collect the clicks, and you leverage the collective intelligence of the people. You collect what they do, and you combine it in a way so new people can have the decision-making process supported by what other people have thought about prior to them. That's customers reviewed, eventually viewed. Now, you can do the same for buying data. Customers who bought, eventually bought. What's the difference? Viewing means that you see alternatives you can buy. Buying means that you see products you buy in addition to what you're buying. Cross-sells, upsells. And then, I think the best of all is, customers who viewed an item ultimately bought that item. So going back to our hard drive here, Amazon.com helping people making decisions based on collective intelligence, it turns out that 42% of people who looked at that item eventually bought that item. That makes you feel that you can't be all that stupid by buying that item. But I had promised you something about the secret desires. So how does Amazon know about the desires of people, about the intentions? The answer is through search. Who of you trusts their husband or their wives more than they trust Google? Who of you shares more with Google than with your spouse? Okay. So for instance, I shared with Amazon that I was looking for video on demand, specifically for the HSM management TV. So now Amazon knows what I'm interested in. That's what I mean by C2B. The customer shares with the business. And I ask you, please, if you have a website, do me the favor and spend 1 hour, 1 hour, tomorrow or next week, looking at the search terms people enter. You will understand what people's desires are, desires they might not even share with their spouses. Here's an example of how people want, desperately want to cancel AOL, all the variations from a search log. At Amazon.com, we try to implement whatever we can to make it really easy with as lightweight as possible for people to share with us in a C2B way. For instance, at the bottom of every single page, there's this feedbacks box, and you can just say if something is broken or if an image is not right, if the language is inappropriate. Per day, Amazon gets about 1,000 such comments out of 1 million plus people visiting. So you could say, you know, that's not that much. On the other hand, you have all your customer base debug the site for you. If you capture the context as well, namely the page where people make this comment, then you have a very powerful way of collecting the intelligence of people to help you do a better job in the context in which people are. So let's summarize what we've learned so far. We've talked about a few data sources. We've talked about intention data through search. We've talked about attention data, transactions and clicks. And we have not really talked yet about situation data. Situation data would be the device you have. Are you searching from your iPhone or your BlackBerry or your mobile phone? Or are you searching from the web? And by the way, where are you? Are you in Mexico? Are you in Buenos Aires? Are you in Germany? Those are outdoor data sources which are very, very important for the marketer, which in traditional marketing you have almost no idea about. Now, I figured out I will share some ideas for you about connection data, about data between people. And specifically, this is a study AT&T did in the United States where they tried to market a new phone product. We compare traditional segmentation, demographics, psychographics, loyalty data with just simply looking at the connection data, who calls whom. In other words, the calling network. So setup is AT&T has a new product and they want to compare how much do we get with traditional segmentation, and it turned out they got a rate of 0.28%. Then they threw away all the traditional segmentation and only looked at the calling data. What's your feeling? Do you think it's better if you would only use one data source than this 0.28%, or do you think it's worse? So the only way the recommendations are made right now is looking at the data about, like, Eduardo makes a phone call to me, Eduardo has bought the product, and then AT&T says, Andreas, would you like to buy that product? As opposed to saying, Andreas is 49 years old, he was born in Germany, lives in San Francisco, has a house in Shanghai, he might be a good candidate for that product. What's your feeling? Who thinks it's better if we just look at the data between Eduardo and me? No hands up. Who thinks it's worse if we just look at the one data source? This reminds me, people said that 17 minutes into the talk, half of the audience has fallen asleep and the other half is having sexual fantasies. So let's try again. Who of you thinks that we are doing better? Okay, because otherwise, why would I show the example? And how much better? Actually, by a factor of 4.8. not 4.8%, but 4.8 as a factor, 380% better, which is a pretty amazing lift, just using one new data source. So that would be my advice for the gentleman from the phone company beforehand. Look at data other people don't have. Don't be stuck in the old way of how things have always been done. This century is a century of data. By the way, data double about every other year. So that means this year, mankind will produce about as much data and share about as much data as the entire history of mankind has produced until the end of last year. In the Bay Area, lots of new companies emerge that try to give us these data. One company I invite you to play with is called Skydeck. Skydeck, if you have a BlackBerry, you can download a client. If you have an iPhone, download a client. Otherwise, you can do the website. Analyze your calling behavior. It's one of the most powerful tools for Salesforce, reminding you who you should be calling. And it's very interesting. Like my friend Go. You know, I called him much more often than he called me. So what does that mean? Summary of this part is businesses try to reach consumers. That's how the conversations used to go. As Fukuda said in the morning, Marcom trying to hire people who get the message out. But what we are seeing is that that's not where the conversations are. The conversations primarily are between customers, C2C conversations. So that's why we now move to the second part of the talk. After we talked about C2B data, we are now going to talk about the C2C aspect of data. Social data revolution. Social data means shared data, knowingly and willingly. I'm not interested in going through the digital trash, sniffing the digital exhaust. First of all, it can be bad for your health. And secondly, it's a lot of work to find maybe a little bit of nuggets of gold somewhere. Instead, listen to people, listen to what they say to each other. So C2C means consumer to consumer, and C2W means consumer sharing with the world. At Amazon.com, when you buy a book, after you have checked out, Amazon asks you, do you maybe have some friend who might be interested in that book? Yeah, I can think about somebody. Yeah. Okay. If that person buys that book within a week, he gets 10% discount, and we don't want you to go empty-handed. You get the same dollar amount as credit towards your next purchase. Ha, repeat customers. Okay. So the conversion rates were absolutely amazing. Why? Because you just bought the book. That means you determine the context. You actually determine the item as well, namely that very book, the content. And finally, you also help Amazon do marketing. You determine the connection because you tell Amazon.com to please mail my friend, tell him that I bought that book. So in this case, people know that I'm smart and hey, maybe I make some money as well. Now that has brought to be perfection with this one button. With a company which is about 5 years old. Share. That is the most important button of this decade. Each month, 5 billion items get shared on Facebook. So let's spend a couple of minutes how that works, and then we'll discuss together, I'll give you a few minutes for an exercise, how you can use this in your company. And I want to show you here, first of all, that Facebook is highly relevant, growing faster in Latin America than anybody else. It's doubling every 4 months. The current numbers in Brazil is about 1 million people, but in 4 months it will be 2, in 8 months it will be 4, and in 12 months it will be about 8 million people. So that's growing fast. Worldwide, every given day, about 100 million people come to Facebook. So here's an example of sharing. In my course at Stanford this year, I had Reid Hoffman, old friend of mine from Stanford, come. He started PayPal, and then he started LinkedIn, and talked to my students about what it really means to be part of that consumer data revolution or that social data revolution. Quick video uploaded, of course, on YouTube. You can all watch it. And I, of course, shared that with my friends on Facebook. So with a push of one button, and that is what's new, I can reach everybody who has a confirmed relationship with me. Then I come back a few minutes later, and it turned out that already three people said they like what I just shared. Then people start tagging stuff. So people interact. Somebody took a photo of me. Somebody else says, oh, that's Andreas standing in the room, giving a seminar to executives, and tags me with Andreas Weigand. So those are all those lightweight interactions which are happening on Facebook. Distribution being key there. As an experiment for my course at Stanford, I made a page called Social Data Revolution, facebook.com/socialdatarevolution, where people share what they find interesting, and has been an extremely rich source of information from hundreds of people contributing. What the metrics are is not unique users, not the number of people who have subscribed to that page, but what do they do there? Do they comment? Do they post? Do they like things? And so on and so forth. Those are the new metrics of engagement. Now, the difference is that they do things knowingly and willingly. Whereas here, wow, golden earrings. Thank you, darling. That's so cute. But who has got the second pair you have bought? So you have to be very careful in what information you grab from people's behavior, which they might not be all that happy to have shared with their 500 best friends. I want to give you an example of a company which is present here in Mexico called Burger King. You know the term viral marketing. In viral marketing, typically the goal is to bring new people to your site. Burger King decided the opposite. Burger King said, dump 10 friends, get rid of 10 friends, and we'll give you one free burger. So they executed that on the Facebook platform, and that is similar to the iPhone App Store, Andrew talked about before me, an ecosystem for third-party applications, and it's about 1 million developers, 1 million programmers working, trying to write apps who are doing this for not much money for companies like Burger King. Lots of games there as well. So here in detail is what happened. Friendship is strong, but the Whopper is stronger. Dump 10 friends and get a free Whopper. In the end, your love for the Whopper sandwich proved to be stronger than 230,906 friendships. So what happened? After 250,000 people were dumped, Facebook shut it down and said, well, we don't like that app anymore. A couple of other networks. LinkedIn, and these are the numbers from 1 week ago, has 236,000 people in Mexico and has grown for more than a factor of 2 in the last year. LinkedIn is a professional network, and the idea there is that you tease people with some information. For instance, as I last logged in, it said, your profile has been viewed by 115 people in the last 15 days, including, and then there's some generic description. If you want to know who these people are, well, you need to subscribe to the service. And the lowest level is $25 a month, then $50, and you can also subscribe for the $250 a month to actually get access to lots of information about people. And that's not cheap. But if you think in your sales or marketing, it is cheap. If you just do one good sale, it's nothing compared to that sale. One of the features in LinkedIn is that you might want to be introduced to somebody very important for sales. For instance, the German VC, Kolja Hebenstreit, asked me whether I can introduce you to a friend of mine, Amy Jo Kim, and of course, short endorsement, Amy, Kolja is great, done. For those of you who are interested in buying aggregate data, maybe for sales leads, maybe for risk reduction, here are a couple of examples of what's popping in the US right now. Unbound Technologies in Palo Alto, Rapleaf in San Francisco, 33 Across in Mountain View. two examples of what these companies provide you with. They all have in common that they look at all these social networks. I just gave you two examples, Facebook and LinkedIn, High Five, Orkut, whatever ones you are thinking about. They try to understand who your friends are, produce a list of prospects for a high-end hotel chain. So if I'm staying in high-end hotels, chances are, you know, my friends also like to have a decent hotel. So they look at my friends, they triangulate with their friends, and then they deliver a prospect list. Very different segmentation from what you're used to. Much more similar to the AT&T example than to traditional segmentation examples. But it's not only about making money, also it's about not losing money. And the example I want to give you for that is fraud reduction. They get claims all the time, and they need to decide, should we spend lots of resources to investigate this claim, or should we just pay it and be done? So it turns out that not only birds of a feather shop together, but also birds of a feather steal together. So if my friends are sort of shady in the sense that, there's a bunch of claims coming in we're not so sure about, they better spend lots of resources investigating my claim. On the other hand, if my friends are all clean, then no worries, no need to spend any money on me. So what we have seen in this part of the talk is a spectrum from very private data on the one extreme to very public data on the other extreme. Consumers have become quite good in asking, what do we get in return for sharing data? What is relatively new is that they are willing to share data which we never expected them to share. Now, in order to give you a little break, what I want to do in the next 8 minutes is, I want you to talk to your neighbor, have a conversation with them, and from the plethora of examples I've given to you about C2C data, figure out one marketing idea based on C2C data. Think Facebook, think LinkedIn, and try to be specific. What would be your first step, and what would be your measure of success? Write your key idea on a piece of paper. We have some of the assistants run through this, collect them, and then I pick a few of them and I discuss them, talk to your neighbor, figure out one idea, how you can make it concrete, what I've talked about in a bunch of examples, write it on a piece of paper, get it to me in 6 minutes. I have 2 minutes to look through them. I'll discuss 3 to 5 of them. Okay, go. I want to resume here, and I want to first thank you for your comments. Somebody says here, make a section on a web page where the customers can share opinions, and that is interesting. But I have bad news for you. Most people don't come to your web page. For instance, I did some work for Nokia, and it turned out that the top 10 search results on Google for Nokia map activation, none of them actually was Nokia. So the power of what we have here on Facebook as an example is that people distribute what they find interesting to their friends. What about influencers here on Facebook? So first of all, there is traditional demographics you can get if you want to target people. And traditional ads, of course, allow you to get very rich targeting data because people, of course, on Facebook are honest about their gender. Because think about it. If they were lying about their gender, their friends would immediately say, "What's up with that? You always said you're a man and now you're suddenly a woman? No way." So here's a question about influencer marketing and what's the difference between real life and Facebook? By the way, can we leave the lights a little bit on in the room so I don't just look into the absolute dark just halfway up so I know that you're still here? Okay, great. So you all have heard about influencer marketing. Influencer marketing means identify those people who are influential and market to them. By marketing to them, you then reach all of their friends for free. In real life, the chain length between people, 38% of all length are 4 or longer. Facebook, 86% of all chain length word of mouth, mouth to mouth communication, 86% is four or more people. Huh. Why is that the case? Pushing a button, share, is easier than talking to somebody. Besides, pushing a button, you reach all your friends, whereas talking, very few people are as lucky as me, having hundreds of people actually listening to them. So that key difference of 38% versus 86% means what you know from the real life world is not true in the virtual world. In real life, what matters is to have influencers tell their friends stuff. What matters on Facebook is how good your message is. Don't try to really massage the message. Try to use the feedback you get in making the product better. Or, said very simply, don't focus on the influencers, focus on the product. I have many more answers by you, but in the interest of time, I want to move on to the next part, to our third part, namely C2W. I started a search on that other computer for moon fruit. Do you know what moon fruit is? No, I didn't know either. But I just looked at what is a popular search term on Twitter right now, and it turned out that between starting my talk and right now, 10,000 people send out tweets about moon fruit. Tata chega de moon fruit, ha 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 ha, whatever that means. And we can refresh this here. And the point being, while we don't really know what it means, some people, namely 10,000 people, in the last hour found it was worth talking about it. So that's an interesting buzz, isn't it? And it's free. People talk about it, nobody pays for it. You have people's attention if you talk about moon fruit. At the end of the day, we'll try to figure out together what moon fruit means. New media tend to start off as better old media, but then do something very different. So just like television in the early days was people standing around a microphone, TV is not just the better radio, but very different. The web is not just better television, but Facebook with interaction is very different. Twitter is not just better short messages, but it's very different as it essence. Here's my friend Go Kasai again, and here's his wish list. And these are the books he tells the world he is interested in. This is what I want. This is who I am. That's what I'm interested in. They share their desires. They share their intentions. Here's a video. Nike Plus had the following idea. You get people to share information about themselves with the world. C2W. In this case, it was about running together. You buy a device which you put in your shoe, and as you go running, that device records where you're running, GPS, how fast you're running, etc. Then you upload what you have just done, your run. You upload your run onto the web to a website called NikePlus.com, and the world can see where you're running. I know people always have security concern. Yes, the world could track you down and, you know, do funny things with you, but they can do that anyways. So the key thing here is that you have now found, as a marketer, a very different way to connect with your consumers. So people buy some stuff from you. They shove it in their shoe. They connect it to the iPod. And now people come on average 3 times a week to your website. Isn't that a marketer's dream? How often would you go to Nike's website beforehand? Probably never. But once you got that device, you go to the website 3 times a week to compare what you're doing, to compare yourself with others, to do runs with others, to hook up with people, say, hey, let's go running together. Trevor Edwards, who is Nike's corporate vice president of global brand and management, says, "We are not in the business of keeping the media companies alive. We're in the business of connecting with consumers and also of consumers connecting with consumers." So I deliberately chose that example as a very physical example, something you shove into your shoe, and something where the consumer shares with the world what data he is creating. Some other examples. In the virtual world, there's something called Delicious. Delicious was bought by Yahoo a couple of years ago. I used to work with Joshua Schachter, who created Delicious. And what people share with the world in Delicious is bookmarks. The bookmarks, the things they find interesting, URLs. So Delicious now allows you to explore. So if you will, there's a web on top of the web. HSM controls the links which it puts elsewhere. But this is what users find useful. So you can, of course, follow HSM's links, but you can also follow the links or the connections people put on top of the web. That is Delicious. Or the example which right now is in everybody's mouth, Twitter. Just want to make the point, whereas Delicious, you share URLs with the world, Twitter is even easier. We were actually considering for the conference to allow you to tweet in and to have behind me displayed what your questions are, what your comments are. And I tried it out in my last class at Stanford last week. And you know what all the students did were they wrote jokes behind my back. That's one use of Twitter, to have real-time commenting on what's going on in real life. I looked up marketing, and that was when I made the slides for the store a couple of weeks ago, and there was a social marketing conference in Chicago, and it's interesting how all these things are less than 20 seconds old. So it really is real time. If I want to know what food is good in a certain restaurant, I search for that restaurant, and it will tell me, tonight, the taco al pastor, that's what you really should be getting. That is real-time search. And here is John Battelle, who started the Web2O conference, who tweets saying, "Just landed in Atlanta, very long trip, yuck." And somebody else just hops and says in a second later, "Hey, have you followed what I have been doing with?" And then his random website. We can push this even further with this little cartoon. What actually do companies do? Best Buy monitors Twitter for what people are saying about Best Buy. Best Buy has people who watch constantly for the Best Buy tag on Twitter and for related tracks. Now, some people are happy and say, "Oh, Best Buy is so totally rocks. I just bought this game station and it works so well, or I had awesome service, or Geek Squad came and they fixed all my problems." And other people are not happy. They share it in a C2W way with the world. Now, if somebody's unhappy there, the customer service agent immediately gets online and tries to have a conversation with that person and says, "Hey, I work for Best Buy. I saw your tweet. I saw that you're not happy. Here's what I can do for you. Do you want me to call you right now? How can I help you?" Think about the difference to traditional marketing. You have people in a moment who think about your product, who think about your company, and you can reach them right there, right that moment on Twitter. And you need basically no infrastructure. You need some person who has access to the computer and knows how to type. Not only about people who might be unhappy with your own product, but think about people talking about your competitors. Let's say somebody is not happy with the washing machine they bought at Sears. Nothing wrong with Best Buy talking to that person saying, "Huh, I saw your tweet. You're not happy with the washing machine. Let's have a conversation. Let's see how I can help you." Or somebody has computer problems. "Don't worry about it. Let's send the Geek Squad over to your house." So from marketing or maybe customer service, these are truly unprecedented ways. Slightly more traditionally, Dell using Twitter for promotions. In the first 18 months, which ended December last year, Twitter had a total of 7,000 people who were following. They sold stuff for $1 million. It has exploded in the last 6 months. Exploded in the sense that it's 10 times more people, but then it was half a year prior to this. So a factor of 10 over a half year, 10 times 10 with the same growth is a factor of 100 over the whole year, is an amazing growth. The revenues are small. They just sold stuff worth $3 million right now. The fixed cost for doing this is essentially zero. You can start tomorrow coming up with some promotion you want to run on Twitter and create your own experiences there. If we think back, ladies and gentlemen, the task used to be connecting computers. Then we moved from connecting computers to connecting pages about 15 years ago. Then the last couple of years, we moved to connecting people. Think Facebook as the example here. What I've been trying to get across to you in the last hour was that what the web really is about, connecting data. I showed you that the car is basically a chip with wheels, and the shoe is essentially a chip with heels. You thought you own the customer because the costs of a customer to going somewhere else were quite high. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, I have bad news for you as marketers. You don't own the customer anymore. Customers are very able to check out other places where they might get products which suit them better. And remember, I told you one of the key things about Amazon.com was that Amazon was supporting the decision-making process of the customer. You don't own the customer. Well, you would say, but the product. I know about my product. Bad news there too. Because Google knows more about your product than you do. But maybe the brand? At least we own the brand. But no, if you do a search, the brand is owned by the people who talk about your brand and no longer about you. So what's left? Left are sites that are platforms, like this company called Get Satisfaction, where people are going in order to get customer service. They go to a neutral site and there's this little button saying, I have this problem too. And people enter what they're interested in. Another example here is how we moved from controlled production for the masses to uncontrolled production by the masses. That's why I've lost your brand. Starbucks. My Starbucks idea. So whereas Get Satisfaction was a neutral platform, this site is owned by Starbucks and it is about sharing, it's about voting, it's about discussing, and it's about seeing what other ideas other people have. 60,000 contributions were there when I checked a few weeks ago. So what the social data revolution really is about, it's about how the mindset of consumers has shifted. People trust reviews. People trust their friends more than they trust official specs. And people use their friends' attention as a filter for information and as a way of discovering things. So the main insight for marketing is that you have to come up with ways how you use that social filter to have people discover your products and services. In closing, a few examples from travel. One website is called flatseats.com, where people discuss in gory detail first and business class seats in much more detail than any airline would share with you. For instance, here, earlier this year, United came out with a new business class, and within days, January 2nd, January 3rd, January 6th, we had detailed reviews, and the question was, I just don't understand why United Airlines could not think outside the box. Did United listen to them? No. Second example, SeatGuru. You want to know which seat you want to sit in? SeatGuru has, by thousands, 10,000 of people, seats labeled on each aircraft. And you know whether that one has that back which doesn't recline fully, or that missing armrest on the lovely exit seat. Or what about hotel rooms? TripKick is an example where every single hotel room gets rated. It's not enough to know that you're staying at the Hilton Hotel in Mexico City. No, it turns out that room number 04 at the end is an oversized room, a nice, quiet corner room. On the other hand, room with 61 at the end has next to the ice machine lots of noise and also is next to the elevator. You probably don't want to stay at that one. Would the hotel tell you that information? Of course not. If you call the Central Hilton reservation line, would they know about it? Probably not. Does the web know about it? Yes. Booking.com, company was purchased by Priceline, now four times larger than Priceline itself, gives you reviews based on your own status. So let's say if you're a single traveler and you really love that hotel, chances are if you're a family with seven children, you might not love that hotel. By conditioning on your specific purpose of traveling and by conditioning on who you are, the reviews which they extract from you are more honest and help other people more. Booking.com, Agoda.com, the Asian part, Priceline.com, of course, in the business of helping you as a customer make better decisions. But sometimes we want to get closer to the intentions. We want to get closer to the future. So here's a company called Virtual Tourist, which allows you to talk not only where you have been, but also in green where you want to visit. You create your own map. You then say where you want to go. And suddenly, in this case, Lufthansa says, hey, we can help you out. If that's where you want to go, these are the special deals you can get. So by you sharing, airlines know your intent, your friends know your intent, and they can make you special deals. Doppler is a company which allows you to share your trips, and it's very powerful because if you, a couple of times a year, happen to go to the same cities as other of your friends, you can be pretty sure that they're going to the same conference where you're going to. JetBlue Airways uses the CW world of Twitter of giving people special deals, and I was told that they even added flights based on people's intent shown on Twitter. So my last slide here is a few questions for you. Who talks to whom? It's ultimately consumers talking to consumers. Who trusts whom? We have seen the shift in trust from a shift to institutions to a shift to individuals. Who is in control? Well, Business Week quotes me of having invented the word me business a while ago. So we've moved from e-business, where the company is in control, to me business, or in other words, from CRM, customer relationship management, to CMR, to customer managed relationships. Customers want to manage the relationships, not to be managed by the companies. And finally, who pays whom? Not that obvious. For instance, if you have a GPS device and you're leaving it on so certain companies can improve their maps on it, shouldn't those companies be paying you for you helping them make the product better? If I want you to remember one thing from this talk, it is that this pyramid, where it used to be on the top, is actually turning upside down. And it's now that it's the customers in the top. But you're not helpless, because they are sharing with you as a business, C2B. They are sharing on platform with their friends, C2C. And they are sharing with the world, C2W. Gracias. Thank you very much.